The date is January 11th, 1991, and we're watching Warlock. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to another spooky I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Chaz to my Cassandra.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
I only did Chaz because it's a fun name. Chaz is such a ridiculous name. I love it. There's no other implications there. I mean, you could have been the Red Fern to my Cassandra.
Yeah. I think we're way off base, at least for me, on the premise of this show with this one.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So this week, we've got another weird movie, so we had to bring in our weird movie expert. Please welcome back for the fourth time, Mr. David Owen.
I'm honored to be here. Hello, everyone.
Always love having you because, yes, when you are here, it means that we're down for something different. I will say, I mean, first reactions, I'll get it out of the way right now. Not the weirdest thing we've ever watched with you.
No. We went safe this time.
Oh, very, very. Yeah, this was vanilla compared to some of the other ones that we've watched under your gaze. Well, this week, we're looking back to January 1991 with a big old asterisk when the movies and theaters were Lionheart, which is the Jean-Claude Van Damme classic, Mermaids, a Cher classic, Edward Scissorhands, The Godfather Part 3, and, of course, our movie for today, Warlock, which earned $9 million on a $7 million budget. Now, I mean, a big old asterisk time. It premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in May 1989.
Yeah.
And then the studio that had released it filed for bankruptcy, and so other people were able to purchase this movie, and it didn't really make itself stateside until January 1991. So I tend to pick the American date, even though it's a Canadian podcast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, David, you're the one that brought this movie to us. Do you have any insight into, like, why it took so long to go from film festival to here? Or did I nail it?
Well, you pretty much nailed it. I don't have a good explanation why, other than it's part of the nature of the business. Okay. Yeah, I've got my own collection. I've got Warlock 2 and Warlock 3, mm-hmm. And the dates there. It gives the 1989 date as the start, and then 93 for Warlock 2, mm-hmm. Which Julian Sands was in. Warlock 3, Julian Sands declined.
Yes.
The script wasn't strong enough. And having watched it, I tend to agree with Mr. Sands. Yeah.
Okay.
But why the first one took so long to come out, I'm not too sure, because it had some pretty good stars in it.
Yeah.
But some of the production is a little clunky.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, Colin, over to you. Got off on a tangent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this show, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, although I don't think we're at too much risk here. So if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So I've got three taglines that appear on the poster of this movie. The first one, adventure. That's it.
Are you sure that's not just like the genre?
I was wondering whether it was a typo. Yeah, I don't know, but it was in the tagline list, so I added it in. Well, number two, Satan also has one son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then finally, number three, he's come from the past to destroy the future.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Anti-Terminator.
There you go. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you said that.
Well, not very good descriptions of the movie. So let's go over to Colin for a spooky 60-second synopsis.
I'm borrowing from Google on this one because I just struggled. I just struggled with this movie. I'm not going to lie,
with
guys.
These kind of movies. Yeah, I get it.
Okay. In 17th century New England, witch hunter Giles Redfern captures an evil warlock, but the conjurer eludes death with supernatural help. Flung into the future, the warlock winds up in the 1980s and plans to bring about the end of the world. Redfern follows the enchanter into the modern era and continues his mission, but runs into trouble in such unfamiliar surroundings. With the help of a young woman, can Redfern finally defeat the warlock? It is basically opposite Terminator. That was my main takeaway when I finished watching the movie. I was like, that's the only way I can describe it.
Oh boy. Yeah, so like I said, when David visits our show, we're always in for a bit of a weird time. I do feel like you took it a little easy on us. When it comes to Warlock, I recognize the poster.
Yeah.
That's it for me. And really, that's about it. Like, if you had asked me who was in Warlock before I started researching it, I would have probably said someone like Christopher Lambert. Like, in this movie, Julian Sands has a very Highlander feel. And that might have been who I guessed was on the poster. But mm-hmm. I know the image. That's my history with Warlock. I'm aware of the image. Throw it over to Colin first. Colin, any history with Warlock before now?
No, none whatsoever. But weirdly, when you told me we were watching this movie and I looked up the cast, I was like, Julian Sands, like I know that name, but I like couldn't place anything that I knew him from. And then it occurred to me that the only reason I know his name is because for some weird algorithm reason, his like disappearance kept showing up in my newsfeed last year. And then, I was like, oh, that's the guy. This is the guy who I was like, went missing for like 5 months. And then I was just weirdly intrigued by that story. So,
that was part of why we chose this one, sort of. To say thank you to Julian Sands for all of his film work. He has done a lot of varied movies. He's kind of known for doing some horror stuff like Warlock, and he was in a couple others.
Yeah, we saw him in Arachnophobia a couple of years ago on this show.
Yeah, oh, okay. Arachnophobia, Gothic with, I just blanked on his name.
I can only help you with Gothica with Halle Berry. I don't know Gothic.
No, Gothic. It also has a really star-studded cast, but it's Mary Shelley hanging out with Lord Byron and in a mansion, and they're telling each other's ghost stories, and then it gets really supernatural and creepy.
Okay.
And I can't remember it's on the tip of my tongue, really famous actor he was in.
Well, let's just do this.
Oh, yeah.
Gabriel Byrne.
Gabriel Byrne, there you go. Yeah. He's in there with Gabriel Byrne and a fellow who was in the Harry Potter films. And there's a famous female actress in there as well. Anyway, that one was big. I first saw Julian Sands in a romantic movie with Helen Bonham Carter when she was really young, called A Room with a View.
Okay.
So he's done everything from romantic period movies to like little bit schlocky horror stuff to interesting cameos and bit parts in a lot of other shows. He has a very varied career.
Yeah.
But when he disappeared, all of Hollywood was like, where's Julian Sands? Where's Julian? They were looking for him for months.
Yeah.
Yeah. So part of doing Warlock today is to homage to Julian Sands. Sorry what happened to you, but thank you for your movies. And he, in watching the comments for in my little collection here, he really enjoyed the Warlock movies. He was disappointed the third one didn't hold its water.
No, so now in the past you have brought us very weird things, the Hunger. You were here for Buckaroo Banzai, and then you were also here for what was the other
Wicker
one?
Wicker Man.
Yeah. So you've brought us some very weird ones, and I keep saying this one feels a little tame in comparison, but those ones you had very deep knowledge on. How deep does your fandom go with Warlock compared to those ones?
Well, so I'm a big Julian Sands fan. He even worked with Cronenberg on Naked Lunch.
Okay, yeah.
And that was a very interesting, disturbing role. So his career working with a lot of really interesting people, and his work, he always takes his work with, there's a sense of humor, but he always, sort of like Richard E. Grant, he is so committed to the role, mm-hmm. no matter how silly. But the thing with Warlock, when I first saw it in the 90s, I was really enjoying like the supernatural movies that were coming out at the time. In Alberta, well, in the prairies, because this includes Saskatchewan and Manitoba, mm-hmm. in the early 90s, there was the Satanic Panic.
Oh, yes.
A lot of people were upset about D&D and influencing kids. And there was I was teaching at the U of L. I was a student at the U of L. I taught there later. But when I was there as a student, there had been a group that called themselves Satanists around that area. Mm-hmm. They take that very seriously down by Lethbridge. But shortly after Warlock came out, like a couple years later, there was in the movie, he explains to Fly, he cooks the fat of a human child.
Yeah.
There was a murder in Saskatchewan in 94, 95 of a teenage boy, huge fan of horror movies like this, big fan of Warlock, cooked his cousin because he wanted to fly.
Okay. Gross.
Yeah. Yeah, very gross. But
I don't know how I missed that one. I mean, I was 17 in 95. I should have heard about that one.
But it really fueled the whole Satanic Panic mm-hmm. thing too. So I remember all over the news there was like the movie Warlock. It was really an uncomfortable press for the film.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I just finished reading, but really I listened to it, an audiobook, like all about the history of D&D. And there is a chapter of it that kind of talks about, yeah, that like Satanic Panic type thing. And it's so like comical to think of now, because now D&D is such like the realm of like, I don't know, tame nerd.
Yeah.
It seems like to me, like it seems like it's so wholesome. Like it's like it's the thing you would want kids to be doing, because they're like using their imagination and crafting their own stories, and in a world where like, you know, everybody's just stuck on TikTok and all this stuff.
Well, I definitely got that from the latest season of Stranger Things, if either of you are Stranger Things watchers. I mean,
yeah.
it totally took me back to that idea, and it's funny watching it from the other side, knowing now what I know about D&D, where it's just like, yeah, like how crazy the Satanic Panic is in Stranger yeah. Things. It's fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in the late 80s, it was a made-for-TV movie, but it was about D&D. And the D&D players, they actually conjure a demon and he goes on a rampage and like, nice. It's like, oh, it's because of that terrible game you played and stuff. Yeah, it was a little biased.
I've seen Reefer Madness as well. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, here we go. Let's jump into Warlock. Let's actually do this. Directed by Steve Milner, who is the director on Friday the 13th, Part 2 and 3, housed, does a bunch of TV stuff. Produced by Steve Milner and written by David Toohey. And so we open the movie, a long time ago in a rustic village. And so we get to have this whole this religious group doing a parade through the town on their way to what ends up being a prison tower, a warlock tower, a witch tower.
Puritans or Mennonites or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So now, Colin, when we last talked about this movie, you know, we read the synopsis off of IMDb, which was, you know, just very straightforward. A warlock from the 17th century gets transported to the 20th century, being chased by a witch hunter. And Colin goes, "Is this a comedy?" So, Colin, seeing the opening and everything like that, you probably quickly found out, like I did, that it probably isn't, right?
I mean, with the right eyes, it could be a comedy, I guess. Like, it's...
There are definitely fun moments.
It's one of those movies that, like, I was just talking to this guy at this coffee shop by my work the other day, and he was talking about how, like, him and his buddies were going to the Garneau Theater to watch The Room, and okay. how it's this, like, big event, and everybody goes there, and they watch it, and they have a good time, and they laugh, and it's like... You know, I'm sure the room, everything I've heard about The Room is it's also not meant to be a comedy, if you watch it with the right eyes, like it's hilarious. And I feel like this is that type of movie. It's funny because like the performances for the most part are like so much better than the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Julian Sands is giving like an A+ performance, but it's kind of one of those things like I've heard Bryan Cranston say about acting. It's like an A+ performance can't make a D script like an A script, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah. Hey, you still gotta split the difference on that one.
Yeah.
And Richard E. Grant too, like he is so committed every scene. He's right there every scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I often found myself I think that the parts where I laughed audibly were anytime Warlock is flying, for one. Like anytime he's flying or they have these weird cutscenes where he's clearly not, but they're just doing these weird shots to like show that he's like flying like directly at them and stuff. Yeah. And like all those or the weird one where they're like in the barn where it's like it's so like, okay, we need to freeze it, cut him out. Okay, move it, move the picture. Like, I don't know. And then, like, yeah, so, I mean, that was high comedy to me. But, yeah, it's definitely, you know, I don't think comedy was the goal.
No, probably not. Like, I found for myself, too, the same thing, that there was this real disconnect between what I was watching and what I was supposed to be watching.
Yeah,
like, there were a lot of moments there where, yeah, his the fire effect.
Oh,
the hand drawn fire, and I guess I just because it's such an older style action movie, I have trouble sometimes immersing myself in because it's so much slower. There's so much less action packed than movies are these days. Like. And so to see the hand-drawn animation as well, it just like it slows it down even more. And it took me out of it almost every time. And that's some of the stuff that I found myself giggling at.
My wife was watching it with me, and every time the fire would come on, she'd go, "Disney."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like so much of the magic, you can tell it was like, "Hey, just do something and we'll figure it out." You know, like I'm thinking even when it's when he's with the priest and he has the priest like girl and he like magically pull the chair to sit him down. And it's this like pronounced like, it's like he's bowling, like, yeah. You know, and he's like this come hither movement and pulls the chair, but it's like, he does it. And then the momentum of the chair doesn't match the speed of his like,
yeah.
His motion, it's very strange.
At other points in the movie, you have done much smaller hand motions and gotten much better magic out of it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, when I was rewatching it and I saw the hand-drawn flames, I was thinking, oh, right, this is an early 80s movie. Because mm-hmm. it was before CG, right?
Yeah.
Well, before CG was cheap enough that smaller budget films could use it. But then I saw that it was 89. I'm going like, why did they use why?
It was weird. There was also one moment where I got taken out of the movie because at one point it kind of felt like Masters of the Universe, which we recently watched, where I'm just kind of like, you know, this is the sense of humor I think Masters of the Universe was missing, because there are some genuinely funny moments, you know, with the fish out of water. But I mean, you know, I guess we weren't sure whether to expect Crocodile Dundee out of it though, with the fish out of water story. And you know, there's a few moments. I don't know. Warlock is pretty savvy. Like he at one point he realizes he needs to take an airplane. Like, when do we get the scene finding out about that he's learned everything about modern day society?
Yeah, and how
And
to what a cargo hold is.
Redfern has to get dragged onto the plane.
Yeah, there was something really hilarious to me about that scene where it's there, he's in the, and then it just, the way it just pans down to him, like, I don't know, playing in the cargo hold. That's like, very strange. I don't know. The whole scene to me at the farm is like, it's just like such a wild sequence of events. Like, you know, between the, you get the blood eyes effect, the enchanted hammer with the like the whole nail thing happening, that like witch contraption they have where they're like trying to strap
Yeah,
his
the
thumbs
toe
to his big
cuffs.
toes, which is like he gets out of it so fast that I was like, why didn't you just take it off earlier? Like nobody was really stopped. But it's, I don't know, but again, like the commitment of the actors to just go with it is, I applaud them all.
I want to point out something that my wife and I discovered watching this. The number of magic spells that are done in the show, Redfern does just as many spells. You know, the pennies, the nails, the direction, the finder. There, he's got a whole lot of magic spells at his disposal to use. But there's no judgment about him using magic to take down the warlock. And the warlock, he does spells too, but I think Redfern actually does more in the movie, and realize that he, Redfern, is our proto Constantine.
A little bit, yeah. I thought that multiple times. I was like, he does seem very Constantine-ish. And then there was also that priest. There was something about him where I was like, this priest seems like, I was like, he seems like he might be John Constantine. I don't know. Like, he just,
Well, like, 'cause they cast a handsome priest. I mean, that guy looks like he could have been an action hero for sure. I know I kept watching these two on screen and thinking, you know, it could have been Jude Law and Tom Hiddleston, right? Like, I kept getting those vibes off of both of these guys as well.
This movie, actually, I would like to see a remake done with a good budget. Richard E. Grant and Julian Sands, you know, yes, they did fantastic jobs, but if the production actually backed up the concept of what we were doing, and maybe it had Tom Middleston and people in, like, I think this movie could be really strong. Or just call it Constantine 2.
It's also like a weird, I was noticing in the movie, like the aesthetic, it doesn't seem like a theatrical movie to me. Like it plays more like how I remember like the Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk, or like the Highlander TV show. Like it had that kind of feel to it. You know what I mean?
I can see that.
And let me ask you guys, the I blanked on her name, the character's name, but the
Cassandra?
Cassandra, did you guys have to look up and see if it was Daryl Hannah?
No. But I also don't know who Daryl
What? Okay, so Daryl Hannah was in the original Blade Runner. She was in Splash. She was the mermaid. She's like, but she has a look. And
Okay.
Kill
Laurie.
Bill. Kill Bill, she's the one with the eye patch. That's her
Okay.
old though. That's
Yeah.
But Laurie Singer looks just like Daryl Hannah, and they're about the same age.
Okay.
And like I've seen this movie a lot, and we even still had to look it up. It's like, is that Daryl Hannah? It's
Yes.
like, no.
I
No.
saw that. I saw that Laurie Singer is like the sister of the Beastmaster, and I thought that was pretty cool.
And I felt bad for Laurie Singer because I'm thinking all through the 80s, Daryl Hannah was probably just one step ahead of her getting all the really great roles like Blade Runner and stuff. She's like, don't.
Yeah.
I'm stuck with Warlock. Yeah. I mean, when I was looking at, trivia, there were no alternate castings for Cassandra or for Giles. I guess they must have been, one and two choice or something. But for Warlock, there were lots of choices. Warlock, Ian McKellen, Peter Green, John Cleese. John Cleese. Yeah.
McKellen. That would have been, they definitely would have been a comedy.
Oh no, how
Yeah,
about
that'd
this?
be a different movie.
Sam Elliott.
Oh.
I mean, this would have been Roadhouse era Sam Elliott, right? So
Yeah.
Jeremy Kemp, Lance Hendrickson, that one's not surprising. William Hurt, James Maxwell, James Caan, Willem Dafoe, Richard White, Brian Cox, Rupert Everett, Stephen Fry, and Patrick Stewart were all considered for the role of Warlock before Julian Sands.
Oh,
Julian
wow.
Sands beat out all those people.
I mean, Patrick, like, I don't know, watching this movie, this is like Patrick Stewart and Julian, like, he Julian Sands reminds me of Patrick Stewart a lot in this movie.
Got a little bit of a Lucius Malfoy quality to him as well.
Yeah,
Little
totally.
Jason Isaacs vibe, yeah. So, okay, let's try. I mean, we've basically touched on the majority of the cast. I mean, the actual cast list is very short for this, so we've really pretty much talked about anything. One thing I noticed about the Mennonite guy, Richard Coos, is his picture on IMDb is the picture of him laying on his back bleeding from the eyes with Redfern over top. That's his official IMDb picture, so
He's proud of
I guess so.
that
Yeah.
moment.
So yeah, okay, so the opening scene where we bring the procession up to the tower and and then we have our confrontation between Redfern and Warlock in the top of the tower. When he gets knocked onto his back, first of all, that looks like a painful stunt. So good on whoever had to do that, because it probably wasn't Julian Sands. But was him getting thrown onto his back like the catalyst for him to be able to do magic again?
Think
Did
the change of
Redfern fuck
position.
himself, basically?
I'm not too sure, but something allowed him to loosen one of his clamps. And
Okay.
when Redfern stormed back in, and he was just undoing the last clamp and took off in the time storm or whatever it was.
Okay. So he pr it probably was Redfern knocking him on his back that, yeah, okay, he fucked himself. Right on.
Redfern, anger management.
Yeah. So yeah, the Warlock escapes. We head to modern day Boston. I guess Boston. I guess no, they're not actually in Boston, are they? So
They
this
go to Boston
vortex,
later.
yeah. So this vortex not only transports them through time, but also space. Okay.
They go to California.
Okay. See, and that's what I thought. See, for some reason, I just had it in my head that you leave in Boston, you end up in Boston, and then they end up heading to Boston. Took me a while to catch up on that little bit for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think they were following the Warlock, and the Warlock was went to the locations of the three pieces of the manuscript.
Yeah.
So that first piece was in that table,
Chaz's
and that
table.
was yeah, and that was in California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely don't do a lot of hand-holding in this movie, though.
No.
For, like, they do some easy exposition dumps where they're reading off the charges and you're able to know where they are and when they are with the charges. But, even at first with Chaz and Cassandra, it's like, okay, are they a couple? What's going on? Who are these people? So it's a few scenes later that you finally find out, oh wait, oh that was her roommate. Okay. And then we also find out Cassandra's diabetic, and my first thought was, I wonder if that's going to come back at some point.
We need a reason for her to have syringes.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, I was like, does it? And then I get it. That's so funny. Poor Chaz.
Poor Chaz.
Chaz, like, Chaz got done dirty. Like, it wasn't enough for him to get his like finger chopped off. That like whole weird, I'm gonna bite your tongue out. Like, what was that? Like, why? What was that for? Is it just so he couldn't scream? I don't know.
Or did he have to make some spell that involved a fried tongue? I
I don't know.
don't know.
This movie loved like pulled out body parts. Like, I think there's a few times where like you get to see some eyeballs come out, and there's they make a real point of showing you the tongue after it gets ripped out.
Sizzling on the pan, yeah.
Yeah, I guess they chose not to show the kid getting murdered, though,
No,
because that would be a
show
bit
the
too.
can with the fat in it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. I wouldn't have thought this movie would be above, you know, like should like they don't, because they don't even really like you kind of just hear after like, oh, this kid got axed. Like, they don't even really like blatantly, like there's not even any like menacing, ominous like,
That moment reminded me of the scene in Con Air where Steve Buscemi is playing dolls with the little girl. And when he gets back to the plane and he's got the Barbie, you're like, fuck, what did he do to the little girl? But then you see her waving at one point. But this one, it's like, oh no, they just blamed it on a coyote and went and shot a coyote instead. Okay, sure. Okay, maybe it was a weirder movie than I thought, but it still feels more straightforward than something like Wicker Man. Like it just it's because we can compare it to things like Terminator or Masters of the Universe or Con Air. Like it does follow a bit of a fish out of water story, but mostly with Redfern, and then Warlock is suddenly shows up and does something like it. Yeah, it just
Well, Wicker Man, there's a the it has a much less predictable plot line. Well, that's the whole premise, is the main character is being duped, right? Where in this one, it's a pretty straightforward quest plot line. The good guys and the bad guys are competing for the same prize. It's split over three. They have to go to these three locations. Who's going to get there first? Each time gives you an opportunity for like a conflict scene, and then you have the big showdown at the end. So it's pretty formula Hollywood wise. I thought the spell against Cassandra was clever.
Why? What?
To while she was so vain.
Okay, so he just wants to punish her just for shits and giggles is all it is.
Because
Okay.
he's a nasty, in league with the devil. I'm gonna mess you up the way that's gonna hurt you the most.
I didn't know whether he got anything out of it.
It's kind of funny, like to Sean's point about when we were first talking about this movie, and I was wondering if it was a comedy. A big reason why I questioned whether or not this movie is a comedy is because when you search this movie on the internet and like it shows up in Google, the picture that like appears is that photo of the Warlock holding the football. And that immediately like created in my mind this idea of like, oh, he's like a man out of time, and he's, I don't know, he's gonna be like the coach, and he's gonna use his magic to like win football games or something, I don't know. And so like I did have like a lot of like weird dissonance for the first 30 minutes of this movie, being like, when is the haha gonna come out? Like, when is he gonna be like and I was like, well, he it's called Warlock. Is he the main guy? Like, is he the protagonist? Like, is he gonna be the one who's, I don't know, for some reason the first time I watched it, I kept thinking like, is he gonna have a turn where all of a sudden he realizes like, oh, I like the world. Like I'm like, you know, I had like he's gonna have the Grinch moment, like
Yeah, his heart
his
grows
heart
two
is gonna grow
sizes,
or whatever.
yeah.
So I think I felt like a little bit of victim of like just the movie that I had crafted in my brain was not the movie that I got.
You like the movie you crafted better.
I mean, I don't know about that. I just like it was just one of those strange things where. And then I was also wondering, like, to your point, David, about how like it's weird that like why can Redfern use magic? They don't make like a real, like lots of times they would in movies where like both people do magic, there's like a light magic and a dark magic, but it doesn't really seem like that exists here. It's just like magic is magic. But it's like you would expect like a Redfern's character like to be like more wary of using magic to achieve his aims.
Especially on the plane, Cassandra said, "Oh, maybe there's a good witch here." And Redfern's like, "Good witch, right? Like he can conceive of a good witch, but he is using magic. So what? There isn't that space in his mind for that." So,
And she says Glinda, the good witch of the West. I mean, I'm sorry, I need to actually her, but Glinda's the good witch of the North.
Well, Cassandra did say that she did a couple years of high school.
Yeah, Cassandra, when they first introduced Cassandra, I was like, oh no. Like, is this the character that we're going to end up with for the entire movie? And unfortunately, it kind of was. She got a bit better as time went on, but like when that aging spell hits her, the makeup, oh my God, not very good. But like she gets feeble. Like when she's chasing down the train, I'm like, "Run, old lady, run! You can do it." Yeah, I don't know. Cassandra just she got under my skin a little bit. Yeah, she was Sarah Connor. She is not.
Yeah, she's not Sarah Connor. That's yeah, so to say.
I'm a little disappointed that when she gets to be young again, though, that her hair is orange, because that was one detail I did like in the makeup, is the first time she ages, her hair is really long, but you can tell she dyes her hair because it's only the very end that's still orange. And so I kind of wish that when she got changed back, she still had the brown hair.
Oh, good point.
I mean, you know, not like this movie was going for as much consistency as possible,
Yeah.
but.
But I think like the one aspect of this movie, to David's point earlier about like how if it got remade, it could be really good. The thing this movie to help Cassandra should have used more was the fact that she seems to be like a doppelganger for Redfern's wife. And there's that whole like I wish they would have used her more in that opening scene, like shown something of her, or like maybe like even had the whole scene where the warlock kills her or whatever, and like
Or
to
do a
even ex
flashback even?
yeah
Flashback, yeah.
to even explain why Redfern's hate burns so bright for the warlock. But also, when the warlock gets a hold of her in the cemetery, he makes this comment about how he's like, "Oh, like you know her, like I know her." And I was like, "Is that the biblical no? Like, did he know her? Like, because that's even that makes the story even cooler because it's like, oh, did you like, was there betrayal here? Like, I
Did you guys used to be brothers?
Like, was it like love triangle situation? I don't know. I was just that piqued my interest.
Well, what's funny is, you know, all your mentions of, you know, remaking this movie today, the airplane scene, though, only exists in 1991 because let's the weather vane, the guy smoking to give him the
Smoking on
clue, like it's like, you know,
the
you're not gonna have any of those, you know, on airplanes nowadays, so
and the creamer that's gone off, that doesn't mean anything. They go off all
That's right.
the
I love him coming on with the weather vane and just the stewardess. Oh, can I take that for you? You know, like,
No questions
yeah,
asked.
this weather vane covered in blood. Do you want to know what airline they were flying on, though?
Oh, which one?
Well, I'll tell you about it in Sponsorship Corner. Sponsorship Corner brought to you by MoviePosters.com. Yeah, that's right. We've got a sponsor, David. With over 100,000 titles to choose from, MoviePosters.com is the number one destination for posters from your favorite films and stars. Use LikeThis115, LikeThis115 at checkout for 15% off your purchase. And if Warlock happens to be your favorite movie, well, I noticed, I looked on movieposters.com and they've got that movie poster on there. You could buy yourself, they've got a couple options. You could buy yourself that movie poster. Yeah, check them out. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Warlock is brought to you by Chevrolet Vehicles, Valvoline Motor Oil, Nike, Carnation, MasterCard, Pan Am Airlines. However, that's not what they were flying. That's just the one that set Redfern off and made him have a panic attack. Wilson Footballs and the Boston Celtics, plus the probably fictional WSA Airline, Hudson General, Silver Arrow Store, Sweet Tattoo, and Metaphysical Bookstore. And this has been Sponsorship Corner, brought to you by MoviePosters.com.
Nice.
I ordered a couple movie posters, and I get this email from the president, and he's like, "Hey, if you have any questions or just want to say hi, you know, like we're a family run business." And so I sent him something back that just said, "Well, I'm sure this is just an auto generated message, but sure, hi, how's it going?" And said, "If you ever feel like sponsoring a podcast," and he says, "Hey, we love to, you know, we love sponsor, especially with a Canadian podcast, so." Yeah,
cool.
Nice.
A Princess Bride and an Avengers and Infinity War poster. So,
ooh, that's sweet. Yeah.
Anyway, so okay, so I mentioned Metaphysical Bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the him going to see the psychic to talk to his dad. I like what a shyster she is. First of all,
mm-hmm.
And he's like, "What are you waiting for?" "I'm waiting until I can speak to the real Zaziel or Zazazel or whatever." I think I wrote the name down. Zamiel.
Zamiel. Yeah.
Yeah.
The
Zamiel. And then he needs to cut out her eyes. Now, those aren't human eyes. Like, clearly those are like cow's eyes, right? Why are they all black? Like, did something he did in the spell like make them turn black and look like cow's eyes? Because like those are nowhere near human eyes.
The way that I justify it, but you're right, they are bizarre looking eyes.
Yeah,
is I think there's the line like you can see through my eyes. So then I think they're supposed to look like the eyes of his father,
okay,
who is a demon or a devil.
Okay.
So that's my justification, but you're right. They are pretty bizarre eyes. They're definitely not her. I might be stretching it, trying to be, you know.
Trying to make it work in your head. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, yeah, being generous to the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, been there. Yeah. The violence in this movie, although it was always shocking, it wasn't gory, weirdly. Like, that's the thing, is like the cutting off of the finger, the biting off of the tongue, the plucking out of the eyes, like there's always this kind of tame quality to the shock value of the gore, which is, I found that interesting as well. Mm-hmm. That they didn't go for anything like that.
No. 80s was funny. It was a time when they were, well, again, they had hand-drawn fire. They, you know, the gore was not like over-the-top gory. There were other 80s movies that really went for that, mm-hmm. as like more of a splatter film, where like, this one, stylistically, they chose not to go there for some reason. But again, it feels almost dated, like it was like a late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, like how much of that is like director aesthetic choice? Right? Like, I mean, I think of something like Tim Burton wanting to do the stop motion animation in Beetlejuice,
Right, yeah.
just because he liked the look of it. So I'm just wondering, like, is there some artistic reason that you would choose to do hand-drawn flame rather than try to do some sort of composite effect?
See, I would be interested to go look at the other movies that this director has done, like the Friday the 13th, and see what if there's any animation effects in there, and just how they go into the gore or not. I'd be curious to compare it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, stylistically, it could have been a choice.
Now, I will give it up for the one effect that I thought was kind of cool was the book merging back together. Like any when he ripped the pages in half
Yeah.
and they glued themselves back together. I was kind of impressed by that effect. But then later on, when the book flies up into the air and forms itself in the air, that one was janky. That one, yeah.
Yeah. The final confrontation there, that was a pretty clunky confrontation scene. Some bits were kind of good, like the physical wrestling with the actors. Okay. The flying, Julian Sands was doing his best to look confident flying on a wire, but it was so obviously on a wire.
What? That was wire work? No.
And then the very obvious animation, which again looked like early 80s animation and not like late 80s, which there's some other early 80s films that are like Puppet Master and stuff. There's like bits where you get the effect and it's like, oh, okay, this is cut to the animation bit.
Yeah. I'm even surprised that they didn't want to show Redfern's corpse. Like they didn't even go that far as to show you what he looked like in this casket. And I mean, the bat was obviously not, they obviously didn't go to Stan Winston for that bat. That was a pretty terrible looking bat. Even the one in Ace Ventura looked better.
Yeah. So the production was a little uneven. Great performances, uneven script, and uneven production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed all the different things though, like the salt on the whip and the hallowed ground. Like I like the different weapons that they had at their disposal for some of these fights as well.
Yeah. And then what brought him down was seawater.
Seawater, bitch.
I really thought that when they got to, what's his name, Redfern, when they got to his grave, that it was going to be like loaded with weapons of some sort, like Terminator 3.
Yeah. Like Bill and Ted, he'd left it there for himself.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, actually, like.
There, the remake. It totally writes itself.
That's right. It sure does. A whole Van Helsing type situation going on. Oh, you did bring up Constantine too early. Did you hear they are planning on making a
I
Constantine?
heard. Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, I can't wait.
I'd have to go rewatch that movie to see how excited I am about it. I don't remember hating it. I really liked though the like Constantine guy that they had in like the Arrowverse. I think he had like I think they did like one season of a show for him, but
He did a pretty good job with it. Yeah.
yeah, that actor was the voice on Assassin's Creed Black Flag,
Okay.
which I just like spent a year playing, and then I watched the TV show. Like, I know that
Oh, my favorite line of the movie. I really like when he's talking about, you know, when she's trying to find out the history of Marion, and he's like, "Well, yesterday you didn't want to know." I like the line, "Yesterday was 20 years ago." I really like that line. I thought that
Yeah.
was,
That is a good line, actually. I remember that one too.
So Cassandra injects him with salt water. The warlock bursts into flames. Redfern vanishes just before they can kiss.
Yeah,
And then we set up a sequel because she can't really destroy the book. She does take it out to the salt flats to bury it in salt, thinking that's going to keep it safe. But I was like, oh, no, no, no. Because I saw on Tubi that Warlock 2 also exists. So I knew that somehow this Bible probably comes into play again.
Yeah.
But this is my question. Does it? Like, because how does I'm assuming David's seen all the Warlock movies. Can you just give us a brief synopsis on like how does the Warlock return?
Yeah, like is this like the Necronomicon in Evil Dead? Like, does it make an appearance in every movie?
I haven't seen Warlock 2 since I bought the collection. I don't remember the manuscript being part of it, but Julian Sands is the Warlock. He returns.
Yeah,
and there's a montage explaining him coming back and like regenerating himself. Warlock 3 is kind of a whole other thing. The Warlock is a different person. He's like a Warlock, and it's more like a haunted mansion sort of scenario where you have to spend the night in the mansion, but there's the Warlock's your host or something like. Anyway, it is really not good.
Knives Out Warlock Edition.
Yeah. Without the goodness.
Yeah. Okay, so is Redfern also part of the stories going forward, or is it just Warlock? Okay, so
yeah.
Okay. He's got a new final girl. So if Redfern doesn't come back, I'm assuming Cassandra doesn't come back either.
No.
Right?
No, yeah, no. Okay. No, just the Warlock.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how to feel about their love story. I thought that was a little ham-fisted in at the end, like
a wee bit, yeah. I mean,
that's like a pet peeve I have of mine. I don't like unearned like romantic finishes in movies.
Yeah. I mean, the only good thing is that he disappears. So there is, you know, he ghosts her quite literally.
Yeah. Yeah. This is true.
Yeah, there is at least that, but I agree it is a little unearned. The only thing that I could think of to justify it is the fact that she reminds him so damn much of Marion.
There's also the weird, it's like so much leads up to their weird like disappearing kiss, like he kisses her forehead, like makes out with her eyeballs, backs away, and then it's like they're gonna, and then I'm like, I don't know, you got enough of his slobber all over your face, I think you're good.
It's been 300 years. He forgot how to kiss. I mean,
you either lose it.
It would have been hilarious. It just feels like, oh, like they have their old customs where it's like hand, hand, forehead, for cheek, cheek, and then there's like, oh, we took so long, now I'm fading away.
Yep, time's up.
Isn't it also a little anticlimactic that in the end it basically comes down to a fist fight?
Yeah,
he basically just challenges him to a fist fight.
Although I did love that when he was like, take it with your hand. I thought that was pretty badass.
Yeah, but yeah, the fate of all the universe rests on fisticuffs.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, there we go. I think that is Warlock. Now, Colin, David, on IMDb, it scored 6.2 out of 10, has a Metascore of 44. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 56% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 48%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a weather vane through the chest, hit us with some reviews.
All right. I was happy to see like a lot of people picked up on the Terminator similarities, so I didn't feel like I was absolutely crazy. All right. Regina P. says, 2 out of 5 stars. I wanted to finally watch this film because I remember my brother liking this when we were younger. It was definitely a movie from the 80s, I will say that.
Not bad.
Just a product of its time.
Oh, yeah. Definitely 80s. Very, very aggressively 80s.
David W. says 5 out of 5 stars, one of my favorite 80s action fantasy light horror films. The cast are excellent, especially the always reliable Sands and Grant as the two leads. Great casting choices. It wasn't very well received critically at the time, to say the least. But personally, I love this slightly campy movie fantasy horror, which has some funny lines and lots of memorable moments. Wore out my old VHS tape back in the day. I watched it so often and rebought it as soon as I could on DVD. An 80s cult classic in my book.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. There seemed to be a lot of this movie didn't really know what it wanted to be. Like, yeah. I at times it wanted to be scary, but it didn't quite get there. And at times it wanted to be funny, but it didn't quite get there. Yeah.
Yeah, that may be why it took a while to get distributed in the States.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't know how to market it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry I took it easy on you guys this Halloween. I think next time we should do Lair of the White Worm. Scottish vampire film.
I love me some vampires.
Yeah, Scottish vampires. There you go.
Nice. I'll end with this review. It's
Greg R. says 3.5 out of 5. I always love this film, although it is definitely on the B-grade side. Worth watching if you like 80s Satan going to take over the world type stuff. I didn't know that was like a specific genre of movie I should be looking out for.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Like, John, when you worked at the video store, did you ever have people come up to you and be like, I'm really looking for like a Satan takes over the world type movie, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah,
it's really what I'm in the mood for on Friday night.
Yeah, just some very, very specific genre choices. Yeah, it's,
yeah.
What's the best movie you could recommend that has Satan taking over the world? End of Days? I don't know. End of Days? Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, the Seventh Son, Prophecy.
And to bring it back to Gabriel Byrne, there's one with Gabriel Byrne as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and what's her name from Lost Highway? Stigmata.
Oh, right, Stigmata. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those would all fall in the supernatural horror. So I remember video stores having a supernatural horror section.
Yeah.
Like, you just have your normal horror.
And supernatural horror, right on.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Warlock. I didn't hate it. I don't think I'll ever watch it again. But I didn't hate it. I don't know. Maybe I missed something. I did enjoy the camp aspect of it. I found it much funnier than I probably was supposed to. And I mean, ultimately, I don't know if it even has me wanting to seek out the next one, you know, to be perfectly honest. I've enjoyed some of the other picks that you've brought me much more than this. I had a lot more fun with Wicker Man last year because it was just so much more surreal. This one, it didn't quite know what it wanted to be.
Yeah,
I was there for a lot of it, but on the other hand, it's like, it's not a great movie though. Yeah.
No, I kind of wanted to do something for Julian Sands to, because he, you know, it's a tragedy that we lost him this last year. But yeah, that'll be the last time. No more of these pity choices.
So, Colin, what about you? I mean, what did you think of Warlock?
Yeah. I, like, honestly, when I was like preparing to come do this podcast, I was like, man, I hope like David has a lot to say, because I fucking don't know like what to like, I don't know what I'm gonna say about this movie. But honestly, like, I think I'm like remembering it more fondly the more I talk about it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The more I talk about it, the more I'm like I think I'm appreciating what I watched, whereas when I just watched it, I was it's literally one of those movies. Every now and then we watch a movie where I'm like, I like literally contemplate, I'm like, do I text Sean and just say like, we need to like scrap this and find something else, because like, I just like do not have like 15 minutes of conversation to talk about this. and that was kind of where I was leading with this one. But then I like watched it again, and I was like, the Terminator thing occurred to me, and I was like, okay, I think I can figure out. I can ride this out. And, yeah. And you know, it's
proto Constantine. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like, am I going to watch it again? No, never. Yeah. I would, to David's point, though, I would watch a remake of it. I think it's one of those stories, like, often happens with this show where, like, the bones of something greater there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just needs to be, someone needs to flesh it out a little bit.
Well,
better.
Just, yeah, for me, like, you know, the idea of driving the nails into the footprints is a little bit ludicrous, but, you know, I found myself really invested with the fact that, oh, she found a head print. Hell yeah. Get him, old lady.
Yeah. Right?
But meanwhile, like, he's like ripped off a board and he's figured out a way to block his feet. Like, there's that going on too. And it's just like, oh shit. And then when she's chasing the train, she's almost there and she trips and it's like, oh, come on, old lady, you can do it. I found myself invested in it, but yeah, it's not a good movie. I was either expecting it to be scarier or funnier. It should have been one or the other, but it was just kind of missing a certain something that either pushed it to full camp,
yeah,
or, you know, or an actual legit scary movie.
Yeah,
like, they could have used more of the warlock, like, murking people. Like, yeah. when he starts off, like, really with Chaz or whatever, but then after that, there's not, like, that level of, like, I'm just gonna rip your tongue out and chop your finger off doesn't really continue.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as he gets all the body parts he needs, the tongue, the eyes, he's...
Yeah, the fat.
The fat, yeah.
Yeah. But he had more of the fat in a pouch in the cargo bay. So he loaded up. He, like, saved some. He had, like, you know, sandwich containers and stuff. And
yeah. Oh, yeah, he packed himself a picnic. I mean, even the cop sitting there with the speed gun, and when he flies by, oh my god. Like, I agree with you, Colin. It's like, reflecting on it, it's like, yeah, it was a lot funnier, you know, in retrospect than like when you're actually sitting there. Like, when you're sitting there watching it, it's like, okay, really, what's going on? But, like, yeah, now that I'm looking back on it, it's kind of fucking funny.
Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, next Halloween we're not doing Warlock 2, David.
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, there's always Dagon, which is really bizarre.
That's right.
Lair of the White Worm. I don't know any other Scottish horror films, but it's pretty bizarre. Yeah. And Amanda Donahue is an amazing vampire / snake lady.
Oh, as one often does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because being a Scottish vampire film, she's aligned with the worm that lives under the, like, this giant dragon that is kept in a cavern under her mansion or something like that. And it's a little, it skirts Lovecraftian territory.
You know, a lot of times when you start telling me about some of these movies, it just feels like you are describing a mushroom trip that you once had. Well, there we go. That is Warlock, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big thank you to our resident guest of weird, Mr. David Owen.
Thank you for having me, guys.
I mean, yeah, thank you for bringing it. No matter what, like, I always love experiencing something for the first time. So no matter what, thank you for bringing forth yet another movie, because I always put you on the spot on Halloween. But this is a great Halloween tradition that we've come up with, is having David Owen on the show to bring us something fucked up.
Yeah, I'm glad to help.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, just tell people. You know, word of mouth is so important for a podcast, helps spread the word of the show and gets more earballs on the show. Or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and give us some stars. 5 of them would be great. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, throw us a couple bucks, and you become an executive producer, so you get a shout-out just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Thank you to our brand new sponsorship corner sponsor, MoviePosters.com. And of course, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin, Halloween moves on. We've done a musical. We've done whatever the fuck this was. So we need to finally bring you something that I think is just a little bit more in your wheelhouse when it comes to scary movies. So let's go to the early 2000s. We talked about it last year. We're finally going to do it. We're going to do Final Destination.
Oh, nice. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Colin missed out on, or was going to miss out on, Final Destination because he was taking a hiatus at the time for a stage production that he was in. So, and then it was scheduling things and it never ended up being released. We ended up releasing a bonus Beetlejuice that we had in our back pocket instead. So Final Destination. I love the Final Destination-iverse. I gotta say. I've always been there for a Final Destination movie. Colin, like, am I right? 2000s, is this in your wheelhouse? Are you an Urban Legends Final Destination? That kind of era of horror movie?
I've definitely seen the first Final Destination. I don't know how many of the sequels I've seen. Maybe one or two. Yeah. But to me, Final Destination is like the reason why every person my age fears driving behind a lumber truck.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Or a log truck, I should say.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, that, or, I mean, I guess, you know, always check your roller coaster. That was the third one, I think, or the fourth one. I don't even remember what all the accidents were. How many?
I don't remember which one it is.
Five? I think there's five of them.
Well, I think they recently, like, rebooted it with, like, you know, they did the whole The Final Destination thing.
Fast and Furious.
I think there's five or six, though.
Yeah.
The one, I don't know what you call them, the one death scene I always remember is the two girls in the tanning bed. But they get burned alive.
And I don't even remember which movie that is.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, they're all a blur. There's only certain... This one's the plane one. That's all I remember. This one's the plane one. Mm-hmm. Devon Sawa. Oh, yeah. Right on. Well, there we go. So until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
Thank you for listening, and we will see you for Final Destination on I Used to Like This One.
Thanks, you guys.
Yeah, no, thank you. I always like watching a movie for the first time. I mean, you scare me with things like Dagon and... Yeah.
Well, I shied away from Dagon. I thought it was too obscure, but we should do Dagon.
I'm down for a weird another weird vampire movie, but...
Yeah, we leave it in your hands when we do that. Yeah.
The other way where it is weird. Yeah. All right, you guys. Have a good night.
Right on. Thank you for putting up with us with your sniffles and everything.
Oh, thank you for putting up with me. Anyway, I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. See you later.
Okay. Bye. Bye.